Okay, y'all, sing along. I think I need to have music in the background as that fades out. Just kind of abruptly stops, and I just feel like the music needs to fade. I have to get with my producer, whoever that is. Welcome all. This is Eliza Jane and Lucha from Freedom Quest on the Radio Jihad Network. Welcome everybody tonight. This is going to be just kind of a what do they call it? Slumgullion, free-for-all. We're just going to inform you with stories up the wazoo. How's that for tonight's storyline? And I will let Lucha take it from there and say good morning. Good morning. Good afternoon. See, I didn't sleep last night. I'll tell you right now. I didn't sleep last night, so I'm going to stumble through tonight. And if you hear me snoring, just nudge me, and I'll try to wake up and get this show going. Go ahead, Lucha, before I completely lose it.
Oh, poor Eliza. She's a little punchy because she didn't sleep last night. So, and I'm drinking wine already. Oh, my goodness. So if we get a little silly, forgive us, people, please. Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. I think it's going to be a little bit of a silly show. I don't know. I'd like to give a big shout-out to our chat room, you wonderful people who support us, because we love you. We've got, well, of course, Eliza Jane. We've got Iggy Mom, Cal Living, Calf, Green Dog, who is also known as Vorp. We've got a couple of guests. Welcome. Holder Awakens, Cal, a.k.a. Red Fox, and they both have their own show. Iggy does, too. And Smokey in Texas. Howdy, Smokey. Thank you all for joining us, and we have a lot to talk about. So how about it, Eliza? What's going on with you?
What's going on with me? Let's see. We've got everything from Al Gore joining us here shortly in a couple weeks to just talk about what a great world this is and to promote his books because, you know, that poor man, he's just so poor that he needs some extra money to come in and tell us all how to live green, you know, that green energy. Is that where Green Dog comes from? I'm trying to figure this out, how green can be warped and I don't know. I'll try to keep up. let's see, what else have we got going on? To imams taking police academy classes, to Let's see, CARE, even back in 2008, a leader in CARE took a class with a Muslim, listen to this, Muslim police, or what is it, Citizen Police Academy. Isn't that just a great thing? That's right. So I'm not even sure where to begin, to everything from Obama, and there's actually... I'm going to finish out with a really story at the end here. I think I will read to you. It was an email to me that will make your head spin. People can be so malicious. People can be so devious. I sometimes think, is there a class for that? Because I wouldn't have thought of that in a million years. So I'm going to leave you all with a really nifty story that we all need to figure out how to do to make it rich in this world. Because two ladies in Michigan are doing just a wonderful job. So remind me to tell you about that story at the end. That'll keep you all sitting on the edge of your chairs.
I sure
will. To Al Gore and his wonderful deal with Al Jazeera. On top
well,
of him
what is
in.
Going on there? Even the pundits on the left are getting on his case about it. Because, I mean, here he is preaching to us about climate control and how he does green this and green that. And then he goes and sells his TV company to oil. You know that, I mean, money is the root of all evil. And he has sold his sad soul to the devil and sold America out to a terrorism network.
Exactly. That's what bothers me the most, is that nobody's stopping the sale. Nobody's stopping that airwaves being polluted with all of the evil that's going to be coming on Al Jazeera. Oh, yeah, it's all in English and it's all going to be good, right? Right? Sure, sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's only the television station that promoted bin Laden. Even had all of the tapes from Al Qaeda were aired on Al Jazeera to inflame the Arab world, and this is a station that we're going to allow to spread its evil empire across the United States. What is wrong? Do you know, I got to tell you, I had some conversations with some people at work today. there is so much going on, so much that it feels like the lunatics have control of everything. They've unleashed the lunatics in the world, and the sane people are sitting back trying to figure out what to touch next, how to control it next. We're sitting here in such an unknown world that you never know what string's going to be pulled next, from your taxes to your smart meters to your gas in your tanks to your guns. Do you ever feel like, holy crap, where's it coming from next?
Oh, yeah. Well, the Bible does prophesy all this, you know. I mean, that there's evil is rising, and we'll call good evil and evil good, and that's what's going on. And, boy, oh, boy, I want to talk about the Million Muslim March on the anniversary of September 11th.
Oh.
Now, it was great that Tom Trento of the United West, I watched an interview between him and he calls himself MD Rabbi Alam. He actually explained that question. He said his uncle called him Rabbi and named him Rabbi. So before I talk about the march, I want to give you a little bit of history. Tom Trento, who you work with, Eliza, it was a great interview. Tom caught him in his lies, and just a great interview. I'll post the link in the chat room in a little while. But so I want to give you a little bit of background on this MD Rabbi Alam. He was born in 1974 in Bangladesh. He had a bachelor's degree in 96, political science. He was a science teacher in a high school and a divisional police school. He immigrated to the United States in 2000, interestingly enough, and joined the U.S. Mm-hmm. Army. And he was honorably discharged in 2005, and then he settled in Kansas City, Missouri, where he taught mathematics and personal finance at the Islamic School of Greater Kansas City. And he also worked a year as the director of an international business for a local management consulting firm. He earned a master's degree in computer science in 2007. Master's degree, okay, so this guy has earned some degrees. Well, in 2007, he founded the Missouri Democratic Party Asian American Caucus, and after that, he became the national chairman of the U.S. National Democratic Party. He served as a satellite campaign manager in 2008 for then-presidential candidate Barack Obama. His efforts on Obama's behalf eventually earned him an invitation to the White House in December 2011. Well, then he goes on to launch his own political career in 2010. He lost the Democratic primary for a seat in the Missouri House of Representatives, and he became a committee man and served 2 years on that committee. He also, and this is very interesting to me, folks, he also announced that he was going to run, he ran for Missouri Secretary of State in the November, Missouri Secretary of State. This
wow.
guy's a Muslim. He's a Muslim, and he ran for Secretary of State. He didn't win, but he did get 40,000 votes. One thing that he has openly speculated about is Jewish involvement in the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Now, he doesn't think that any Jewish people died in those attacks. Well, a note at the bottom of this bio says, it should be noted that the State Department long ago debunked the notion that Jewish employees in the World Trade Center forewarned about the attacks had skipped work on that day. Officials estimate that 200 to 400 Jews died on September the 11th. He believes that the war on terror is anti-immigrant. So if we engage in a war on terror, that means we're against immigration? No, 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 no. He attended a 2012 presentation by Sheikh Khalid Yassin, a pro-Sharia radical who supports Islamic terrorism, and he also denounced the 2003 arrest of former Palestinian Islamic Jihad leader Sami al-Aryan. Now, this guy, he has founded a new organization called the AMPAC, American Muslim Political Action Committee, and they are doing a Million Muslim March on September 11th in Washington, D.C. He's quoted, announced at their press conference in New York, quote, "We at AMPAC are planning a historic event for 9/11/13. 1 million Muslims will march to Washington, D.C., not to mourn for the victims, no. Okay, I'm getting out of the quote, sorry. This is still quoted. 1 million Muslims will march to Washington, D.C. and demand that our civil rights be protected by our government. We are demanding that laws be enacted protecting our First Amendment rights. We are asking President Obama to fulfill his promise from his first campaign for the presidency of a transparent government. Lastly, we are asking for the establishment of a real 9/11 commission to reveal the truth to the American people." Now, I am sorry, Mr. Alam, you are going to Washington, D.C., to our capital, not to mourn for the victims of 9/11, but to demand your civil rights? I don't think so. What kind of a slap of the face is this to America? On 9/11, you had 364 other days of the year to plan this, but instead you picked September 11th to hold this thing? No, I don't think a million Muslims are going to march on D.C. on 9/11. There might be some. But what a slap in the face to Americans and others who were killed on that day. They're demanding that their civil rights be protected. Well, how about you start obeying the Constitution and stop trying to enforce Sharia? Because when I listened to that interview with Tom Trento, and this guy, Tom specifically asked him, because he took an oath to the Constitution as a military man and also to run for Secretary of State, to obey the Constitution. And Tom Trento specifically asked him about freedom of speech. And, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, I believe in freedom of speech, blah, blah, blah. So Tom specifically asked him, do you protect an American's right to mock Muhammad if they want to, you know, to make fun of Muhammad if they want to. And he wavered on that. Boy, did he waver. And then Tom, I mean, Tom is really good. I got to give it to Tom because he knows how to interview somebody. He knows how to keep them interested and making them think it's all about them, but then he puts those bammers in there. And so he brought up the petition that this MD guy had signed to limit the freedom of speech of Americans when it came to, I think it was about that the movie maker that made the Muhammad movie. So here he signed a petition to limit the freedom of speech of Americans, and yet he's going to try to say that he's for the freedom of speech. So what civil rights is he demanding? Well, I would say that he's demanding Sharia, and he's demanding Islamic supremacy over us Kafirs. So we need to make as much noise about this, you guys. Talk about it to your representatives. Get some counter demonstrations out there. Tom, he's pretty slick, Eliza. He asked, because he said he couldn't wait to be there, so he asked MD if he could be his honored guest. And, of course, the guy had to say yes.
Yeah, that's great. Isn't that great?
Yeah, so Tom is going to be there right in the middle of things with the founder of this organization and the starter of this Million Muslim March, and Tom's going to be right there with him as an honored guest, and I can just imagine what Tom Trento is going to do with that opportunity. Oh, boy, oh, boy.
If he goes, I'm going, so I might just tag along with him, be a part of the team, you know. It should be interesting. I don't know if Tom will go or not, but, yeah, it just I kept texting Tom going, practicing tequila. He's full of crap. And Tom just kept coming back with, yep. This guy is just blathering on and going on about how great and wonderful and how he served in the military and he volunteered to do that. And I'm thinking, boy, that's where it gets dangerous. You know, we get these guys in the military and they can't swear allegiance. They cannot swear allegiance. They cannot kill other Muslims. That's the crutch of it all. If they go into the military and try to uphold the oath that they swear to, then they become apostates and they become, well, they can't follow their religion because their religion says they can't kill another Muslim. So how do they do that? How do they join the military when we're at war with the Middle East? The Middle East and Islam, I don't care that they won't say it in our government, but we are. And then on top of it, I come across these articles where we've got West County Mosque holds first police academy graduation for citizens. A mosque has the police force. This is in St. Louis. 50 St. Louis area Muslims completed the mosque's first ever citizen police academy. This is unreal. This happened this past January. Wasn't years ago. It was this past January. The first time course has been offered by St. Louis County Police at a mosque. And the first time the mosque has had such a course available to members for credit. On top of it, for credit. Wednesday night, the graduation ceremony was held at the Darul Islam Mosque in St. Louis. I'm speechless. I get tongue-tied in this because I'm still not believing it. So a lot of the citizens questioned it, and they started asking questions, but they didn't have any, you know, why does it have to be focused on Muslims? Why are you, do you allow any others? But it's at a mosque. Is there a Christian that's going to go to a mosque for a police training? I'm not so sure I would. When does the Protestant, Christian, Catholic, or Mormon classes start? Somebody asked. Well, here's the reply. We have held many Citizen Academy sessions at various churches in the region. Really? But have never excluded anyone because of their religion. We just graduated an academy at Grace Union Church, Protestant, in South County. What in the world are we doing running police academies for general citizens? Is this part of Obama's little army that he's trying to create? Their citizen army?
I do have to give it to them because they are very organized, and we should take that as a wake-up call. As patriots in America, And we're involved with, I mean, we've got so many different organizations we're involved in. I speak for myself, but I see a lot of it out there as well. You know, we join all these pages, all these, you know, the Tea Party to Patriots pages, and we're so unfocused on one thing that we're all over the place, and we're not organized, and we're not focused like they are. So I've got to give it to them. I've got to give it to the Muslims for being a whole hell of a lot more organized than we are, because we could sure use a lesson, and we could learn a lesson from them, and we need to, because they are coming at it from and I learned this from Eric Allen Bell, is that they are for something. They are they're out there, and they're putting pressure on the governments and on different organizations, and they're standing for something. So when we stand against them, then it looks like we're the haters and we're the hate mongers, and we're standing against something. No, we need, as a group, as one voice in America, we need to form some kind of an organization. I know Pamela Geller's got the AFDI, but we need to stand for something, and we need to be just as active as they are.
Well, there are a lot of groups out there, and that's why I think I've said it here, is I help run an organization here that's a patriot group, but there's like four other tea parties here as well. So I have corralled them into a single party kind of thing to meet on a regular basis to say, look, we got to have one voice. We got to have the numbers to be able to do that. But getting back to this, here's something to think about, Lucha. I got to thinking as you were talking about the Million Muslim March, and if they're getting people through the police academies, look what that's doing. Think about that. If we get a Million Muslim March in D.C., and they've got all these police academy graduates that think they have their little star and they can put it on their and shoot, they go to any kind of one of these uniform stores and buys the police officer uniform, what does that do? Where do we, you know, they're going to come out in these kind of marches and pretend to be police?
Exactly. And even in other situations, what are they going to roll with? Say they come upon a rape. Are they going to look at the victim from a Sharia standpoint, like it's her fault and they're not going to do anything to the
guy?
I mean, there's a lot of situations where you could imagine how they could be extremely unfair. What if you got a woman getting beat up by her husband? What if she isn't even a Muslim woman? What if it's just an American couple and she got beat up by her husband? You know, it's domestic abuse. But if there's a Muslim police officer, what's he going to do? You know, I mean, to have them designated as Muslims, as a Muslim civilian force, then you got to worry about what the scope of their actions is going to be. And that's disturbing.
It is very disturbing, and if you think about what they're doing, there's another article I came across that talked about they're starting their own university now so that they can get Sharia-compliant classes, so they can teach Islamic law, a.k.a. Sharia, so that what they're going to do now, I mean, this is the whole infiltration, creeping Sharia, creeping civilization, jihad. They are really close, I think, to doing their final stages. And this is the disturbing part of it all, is that it's starting to come together because they've got so many in so many areas, and the biggest defense we've got are people with, you know, our groups, are all of our individual groups, but they're funded. They are so funded. That's how they can do all of this. We don't have the money. All the groups here that I'm working with, they're working on pennies a day, not even pennies a day, pennies per event kind of thing. So, and everybody's like adding their little 2 cents to be able to help out for the group. We don't have the funding. And so how do we continue to fight somebody who's got these billions of dollars that they're bringing in here and starting everything that they need to start, from offices to you know, just general facilities and housing? And just like at the ISNA conference that I was part of with Tom's group down in my Tampa last year, it cost us $25 to get in. That included child care for any of the families that brought in small children. Any conference I've been to learn and educate myself on this whole Islamic movement, it's been upwards of $200 to $300. How is that? I just don't understand that. I understand that we've got speakers that come in that are going to, you know, need expenses covered and all of that, but that's where we're losing the boat, too. It's sailing down the seaward, and we're all screaming, wait, stop for me, stop for me. I need to jump on, and we can't. It's too late. We are all trying to catch up to something that has been building for 30 to 40 years, and none of us, I'm included in that, none of us realized it was there. Now we're all playing catch-up. We're all trying to understand where it's infiltrated, and the ones that really identified it 5 to 10 years ago, they now have been forced out because, gee, they're not being politically correct. You know, they had to, they got rid of, what, 1,500 pages in the FBI that might have identified something Islamic. Oh, for heaven's sakes, can't do that. We can't identify the enemy. Let's not figure out who we're fighting, because then it'd be too easy to figure out what to do against it. Oh, sorry. Anyways,
exactly.
Just found my energy. No. Found my energy. So, that, you know, I started to think about this Dar el Islam Rada, whatever, this mosque where in St. Louis, and tried to, I was just curious a little bit about the imam there, and gee, he's just a nice young man who came through the ranks in a nice Muslim family, even attended a Catholic school in his middle school years. And the parents were hoping that he'd become a doctor, engineer. Well, don't they all? Isn't that what they all want him to be? Isn't that what they're all becoming, so that they can take over and do everything that they're doing? So here they've got this 27-year-old running this mosque, this Dar el Islam mosque in St. Louis that these graduates came out of. Isn't that great? It's just so great. It's the largest in the metro area. This guy is the son of Indian immigrants and is devoted to the city's sports teams. There you go. There's some more infiltration. He also represents the ascendance of a distinctly American brand of Islam. Now, this is written on the Huffington Post. So take it all with a grain of salt in terms of how they're going to spin this. But he's an American brand of Islam. What is that? What does that mean, do you think, Lucha? Says a new generation. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask you to repeat it.
Oh, it says he also represents the ascendance of a distinctly American brand of Islam. Sounds pretty nice and pretty calm and pretty peaceful, right? A new generation of Muslim Americans who were born in the United States and who spent their teenage years in the often uncomfortable glare of post 9/11 spotlight. Oh, I'm going to have a teardrop. Oh, wow. I need counseling for that one. Anyways, now, then they go on to say, if you look at ads for imams, sorry, they ask for candidates who know English, can relate to the interfaith groups, and communicate with younger generations. And this guy being so young, isn't it great? He does. They don't want to lose the younger generation. No, I guess not. Probably not. So anyways, I'm not going to bore you with all of the details, how mom and dad just felt so proud of him because he decided to go and study the Quran and study about Islamic law and just make them proud. So in 2008, Umar left for South Africa. I thought this was interesting. Why? If they've got, you know, most of them come here to college. Most of them get their degrees here. And then we send them back and for them to overthrow governments. Yeah, Mohamed Morsi, but anyways. In 2008, Umar left for South Africa to pursue a 2-year master's degree in Islamic jurisprudence, a.k.a. Sharia. Now, they didn't say that, but I did. And earned the title. Oh, this is how they earned the title. I wondered. Mufti. Does that mean he wears muffies on his ears? I don't know. Anyways. After a 6-month stop in Cairo in 2009 to immerse himself in Arabic, Umar moved to Springfield, Virginia. Now, most people move from, like, Atlanta, Georgia to Springfield, Virginia. Maybe even California to Virginia. Moving from Cairo to Springfield, Virginia.
Hmm.
Can we all kind of put in some thought in terms of what that means? What's in Virginia? The mosque that brought about all of the players that took down the towers, the twin towers, Yeah, Virginia is very well noted for that. Oh, he came there to teach Islamic law at a school similar to the one he graduated from in Illinois. Now, that's when the job opened up in St. Louis. We wanted someone who grew up in the community, but also someone who had been overseas and was qualified. Of course you do. You want somebody from overseas so that they can start the jihad training. Okay, let me see what else have we got on him. Yeah, I mean, think about it. How often, why couldn't he have gotten all of his training here? He could have learned Arabic. He could have learned about Sharia law. You know, what's he got to go overseas? Well, you know, if he's an American citizen, you guys put it all together. I'm sure you can add two and two. So here's this mosque. Here's these Muslims. Here's our taxpayer dollars at work for the state of Missouri, because there's one, two, three, four police officers working this project in a mosque, teaching them all about police. Because, you know, it's going to make them more friendly. It's going to be easier for them to work within the community. You know, it just seems like such a wonderful idea. And sorry, Kel, but they're doing it in Canada as well. Islamic school hosts First Ontario RCMP Junior Police Academy. Couldn't happen just in America. It's got to spread to Canada, too. Sorry, guys. It is there, too. And, gee, on top of it, there's just this smiling young face all dressed up in her hijab standing in front of a police car. Oh, it's just inspiring. Oh, goodness sakes alive. And that's the part I don't understand. How are they going to have, even if you have Muslims going through a regular police academy, how are they going to be able to do their job, all hijabbed up, women? How are they going to be able to do that? And I've seen some articles about that. They're fighting to keep the hijabs and keep their heads covered. And, gee, okay. I suppose that way you can't have any bad guy pull your hair, but then again, you're not supposed to have it down on your collar. I think it's kind of like the military, isn't it, Lucha, where uniforms require hair being neat and off the collar, and I don't know, something like that I remember hearing years ago.
I don't know the requirements for female police officers. But yeah, you're right. I mean, if they think that they're gonna wear hijabs and do their jobs, I mean, they're not gonna be really good police officers, because that's gonna limit their ability to move. It's gonna limit their ability to see. And it's going to limit their ability to completely do their jobs. And, you know, you got to wonder, how many Muslim women, and I hear it's in Gaza now, is it high school? I don't have the article in front of me, but I just saw an article today about Gaza and how the Hamas is forcing the girls there to wear hijabs now. And these big black things. They're not liking it too much. They are really not liking it too much. And what I thought was interesting was that, you know, how many Muslim women that are wearing these burqas and these hijabs, how many of them really want to be wearing it? Okay, you see them out there and they're wearing it, but how many of these women really want to be wearing these things? How much resentment is there on their part towards Islam and towards the men that are making them wear this? I couldn't imagine. I mean, I'm sorry. Ain't no man going to tell me what I can and cannot wear, what I can and cannot say, how I can or cannot worship. You know, I have a computer, and he does what I want him to do. I don't do what he wants me to do, you know?
Yep.
So I don't know how these women are putting up with this, you know? I mean, I guess some of them, they're fooled into believing that, oh, they're following Allah and they're modest and all this and this. But I'm sorry, I bet you there's a lot of westernized Muslim women who are saying, oh, no, 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 I am not going to be the one to put on a hijab if my man tries to tell me to do it, because it ain't happening. You know, and I want to go back, if I can, to the Million Muslim March for a minute, because I've got his Facebook page, the MD guy. I can't call
MD
him a
rabbi.
I can't, yeah. I just can't call him a rabbi. I don't want to give him that. You know, thing, but there's this person, yeah. I was reading down his Facebook page, and even though I didn't reactivate my Facebook account, I can still look at his page. And so there's this guy named Issa Hodge on there. And this is interesting to me, Eliza. He asked this 11 hours ago. He says, anyone know why CARE isn't on board with us at AMPAC? So, it, you know, I mean, I don't know. That was interesting to me. But this MD guy, MD alum guy, you go up and down his Facebook page, and he's painting himself to be a victim so much. You know, he's, dear fellow citizens, I am so, well, he didn't spell shocked right, so he's not shocked, he's socked. I am so socked and stunned. Please watch this video of United States retired Major General, you know, and he goes, America, read this to find out who is the real threat to this country. After reading, share it with everyone. Spread the word to educate and stop the ignorance, to stop hate. And it's a look at the Islamophobia network that profoundly misrepresents Islam and American Muslims in the United States. And then, Issa Hodge, he says, the most important thing I read, and I know most Americans are unaware of this fact, that the more they allow the propaganda machine to work its message of intolerance and hate, the less Muslim Americans will help for fear of reprisal from neighbors or our government. Since 9/11, the Muslim American community has helped security and law enforcement officials prevent more than 40% of Al-Qaeda terrorist plots threatening America. The largest single source of initial information to authorities about the few Muslim American plots has come from the Muslim American community. Okay, that's all fine and good, but when you start talking about the greatest threat to America is Islamophobia, I don't think so. The MD guy, he goes on to say, he says, this is a big lie and propaganda of media. I am not a jihadist or Islamist. However, I am Islamic in my moral actions, and I struggle for my own desires. That was an interesting way to put it. He struggles for his own desires? All right, and he's Islamic in his moral actions. So does that not make him an Islamist? He says, this does not make me jihadist or Islamist, does it? By the way, this is MD Rabbi Alam, and I refuge to be
refuge?
Such a jihadist. He refuges, yes. He refuges to be, well, I mean, if I could, I can do all, I mean, I'll, okay, I'll read this as he wrote it. I'll read it as he wrote it, okay?
It'd probably be better. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, and he's got all these PhDs and all those degrees and everything. But, okay, he says, and I refuge to be such a jihadist or Islamist, yet and indeed I am a God-fearing true Muslim, like God-fearing true Christian or God-fearing true Jewish. So if you are not a God-fearing person, there is no way you can judge me and or even you can understand me. At the same time, I am not a conservative Muslim, and I deny being a part of any way, any shapes of violence. So if you are involved with any violence, even in your mind, or even just being a racist, don't come and judge all the peace-loving Muslims, and don't mix it up with few bad apples with rest of the good apples. And that was our dear MD alum.
So if we got a team of people and went to the Million Muslim March, what would you think would be the thing to do? How could we infiltrate that? How could we disturb it, disrupt it? Not cause any physical confrontations, but how do you think it would go if somebody were to go and kind of do that kind of, you know, interviewing, cameras, recording? What do you think would happen? I'd be curious what some of you folks in the chat room would say. You know, it's something to think about, because I'd be curious just to find out how many actually show up. But then again, with my luck, the media would say, oh, well, there's, you know, 10,000 people, because half of them were up there just to figure out what they were going to try and disrupt. You know what I mean? I wouldn't want to be counted into that amount, but that's the way the media would play it, I'm sure.
Well, I think you could go. I mean, Tom Trento, he has the cameras and the microphone to go in, and he's already honorably invited. to stand with MD. I mean, he's, you know, he's going to be his honored guest. And so I would think that that gave him a little bit of a license to interview some people about some things, you know, to ask, you know, what is your purpose for being here? And, you know, since MD has said on his Facebook page, of which I will actually copy and paste and talk and type and put it in the chat room at the same time, because I've got to get good at doing this, because, oh, woo-hoo, I just did it. Okay, there's his Facebook page.
You were talking and typing at the same time? Wow, I'm impressed.
I know. Well, just copying and pasting. But so I would think that Tom, our good dear Tom, could, you know, that you guys could go and ask some questions of some of the Muslim attendees there, such as MD, when he writes on his Facebook page that that Islamophobia is the true threat to America. Ignorance has caused so much suffering on earth. Oh, this is his statement about the Million Muslim March. Ignorance has caused so much suffering on earth, making people misjudge people and stereotyping them. Ignorance is making many Americans believing that all Muslims are criminals of 9/11. Ignorance blinded the minds and the eyes of the people to the point where they stopped considering Muslims as other humans who have rights and lives. Great majority of Americans developed this hate toward Muslims that making them react in a very negative way. This negativity is now threatening the lives of Muslims in USA. Therefore, the Million Muslim March has launched a movement to lift the ignorance and bring light in the nation through education and awareness. Okay, so Eliza, you can take this statement to Tom Trento, and you could have the MD alum reminded of this. And, well, you're right, ignorance has caused a lot of suffering. And so let's bring some light on the nation through education and awareness. Now, can you prove to me that Islamophobia is more of a threat to America than Islam is? And if so, how?
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll just have a little story time, and I'll read straight from the Reliance of the Traveler. I think I can probably find a few verses in there that say something about kill the Jews, kill the apostates, honor killing. Gosh, I think that's somewhere in that book. So we'll just have a little story time. We'll sit down and have a little story time with a megaphone out in the middle of the Million Muslim March. What do you think? Oh, that probably disrupt things. And gosh, you know, interpretation is half the battle, right? Because, gee, I just probably wouldn't get those verses. I just somehow would not fully understand it, right?
Well, you know what I was thinking about too, Eliza, and I was going to mention this to you guys, if you go to anyone who goes, I was going to mention if Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer get involved and they go, and Waleed Shubat and Jamie Glazoff. I mean, there could be a big group of people.
Oh, yeah.
And
instead of
disrupting the Million Muslim March, because that would make us look bad. I mean, I'm not going to be able to go, although I wish I could. But you could put a wall of protection around the Ground Zero Mosque.
We'll get some of the Muslim Police Academy citizens to surround us and protect us. What do you think? Think that'll work? Sorry. Oh, it just gets better and better, don't it?
Forbes says get a vendor's license and sell hot dogs.
Cool. Oh, wait a minute. You got to make sure it's pork hot dogs. Because I think
pork,
that's what they
sandwiches?
Really like to eat. Pork sandwiches, pork barbecue, pork pig's feet, pork's ears, sow's ears.
You know what, though? In all seriousness, that would just make us look bad, and that would make them look like the victims, and that would make us look like hate mongers. Okay,
I'm
go ahead and have your
fun
then.
Yeah, I know. Gosh, we got to be politically correct a bit. But you know what? There was another one. Let me tell you about this other Citizens Police Academy. This is why I said it's been going on for a long time, and we've just not known it. I found another one that said, this one disturbs me even more. CARE, Nevada, director graduates from Citizens Police Academy. The Nevada chapter, this is in 2008, March of 2008, so this has been going on for quite a while. That's pretty scary. I can only find two articles on the internet, and it's this one in 2008 and the one's current. So how many more of these are out there that we just aren't finding? The Nevada chapter on the Council on Islamic Rights Relations, as Vito says, announced today that its executive director has graduated from Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department's Citizens Police Academy. See, Citizens Police Academy, just that term alone bothers me. Yasser Moten received his graduation certificate during a ceremony last night at the Jerry Keller Training Center. Well, at least it wasn't a mosque at that point. So here we've got the director of CARE in Nevada. Wow. Islamic Civil Liberties Group has 35 offices describing CARE in Nevada. Its mission is to enhance the understanding of Islam, encourage dialogue, protect civil liberties, empower American Muslims, and build coalitions that promote justice and mutual understanding. I think I need a little elevator music in the background, don't you think? That would be good for that? Okay, never mind. I'm sorry, I'm having too much fun tonight. I think I'm going to probably just let my head explode after this class, or after this program. So, anyways, Police Academies, Million Muslim March. Which one will you sign up for? Because they all look so happy. Oh, you got to go. Yeah, what was it? Kel, I think you put the link in there for Bare Naked Islam. And it had this great, wonderful picture. All these bearded men. Where's the women? There's not a woman in the group. Every one of them are men. They're bearded little. Okay, I'm biting my tongue. Oh, there is a woman. Ah, there's one. Okay. So at least I got a hijab gal in there somewhere doing something. So, anyways, mosques are running our police force. Million Muslim March. Although I've heard that little guy that Rabbi Imam, whatever his name is, Mufti this, Mufti that. He's, from what I thought I saw somewhere, he's somebody's little boy toy. So maybe that's why CARE doesn't want to have anything to do with him. Maybe that's part of what the response to him is, because they don't want to really participate with somebody who's a little off the beaten path that actually could be stoned and killed as a homosexual. Anyways. All right, I'll leave that alone because he didn't really say that in the Tom Trento thing, but somewhere I saw that or heard it. So what else is going on, Lucha? What other great, wonderful news is out there?
Oh, my goodness. Well, there have been some victories. Oh, shoot, I don't know if I could find. I was just reading this MD. I don't know why I'm on this MD guy. I guess because Tom talked to him. And I'm just on this guy for some reason. This is Issa's rant. He's talking about the Obama.
Oh.
He talked about the inauguration of Obama, and that we are being stripped of our constitutional rights. As a Muslim American, my freedom is in jeopardy. That my very right in the pursuit of happiness could stop any time he, as the president, feels I've committed a belligerent act. In his opening statement, he attests to what our country is, a democracy for the people, by the people, when he says, you know, and then he goes on to, you know, write down what Obama said in his inaugural speech. You know, we affirm the promise of our democracy. We recall that what binds this nation together is not the colors of our skin or the tenets of our faith. So he goes on to recite Obama's inaugural speech.
Mm.
And then he goes on. This is Issa.
Oh, okay.
No, it's the guy Issa who wondered why CARE wasn't involved in the march.
Okay.
And he says, in fact, look at what we have given up just since 9/11. All in the name of security, we allow our government, local and federal, to wiretap plant malls and GPS surveillance. We allow our government to perform strategic assassinations on U.S. citizens without batting an eye. We sit back and watch them incarcerate without due process American citizens. Now they are trying to disarm Americans. They sue companies for pennies on the dollar that helped cause our financial meltdown. Keep in mind that the $500+ million the government won on the five banks isn't 1% of the profits they made, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so this is interesting to me because he, as a Muslim American, is worried about Americans being disarmed. Now they're trying to disarm Americans, and he's worried about the being incarcerated without due process. And those are the things that we are worried about as well. So it's just interesting to see that a Muslim American is worried about the same thing too. And, you know, you look at this Facebook page, they have a lot of stuff on here, and it's just interesting to go down and look at it. But I want to go back to what I was talking about with the wall of protection at the Ground Zero Mosque, because I don't know where the Ground Zero Mosque is in relation to where this march is going to be. And by the way, the march is scheduled to last from 6 in the morning till 11:30 at night.
Oh,
and I don't know. 6 in the morning till 11:30 at night. Yes, ma'am.
The march is in D.C., right? And
right.
The Ground Zero Mosque is in New York.
Oh, Dad, I'm stupid.
No. No, you're good. No, I didn't mean that the way that sounded. But, yeah, the Ground Zero Mosque, well,
it is in New York, isn't it? My goodness, you're right.
Raul?
Never mind that idea then.
But, you know what?
I'm going to check off this Facebook page so I don't keep looking at it. It's gone.
some of me is rubbing off on you. Sorry, Lucha.
Oh, no, it's this red wine, I think.
Have another sip.
Oh, sure.
What was I going to say? You got me interested now. It's like you said 6 a.m. to 11 o'clock at night?
11:30
at night. Now, where would they be marching? How could they have a march that long?
They give an address of 1400 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Kath is telling you to put that glass of wine down.
Well, no, not 1600, 1400, wherever 1400 Pennsylvania Avenue is.
That's the White House. That's where it's starting?
No, the White House is at 1600.
1600, that's right, 1600, that's right.
Right, so whatever 1400. So I don't know where their march is, you know, I mean, they've got all kinds of ads in there and everything, so I don't
know
where their march is going to end up leading to. But, oh, yeah, you know, they're going to be in front of the White House at some point demanding their civil rights, Eliza, don't you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then think about how much taxpayer money is going to go into protecting that march, the police patrols that are going to be needed. There's going to be a huge expense for that. Who's paying for that? I think the Saudis are coming in to help fund that and pay our police. Of course, half the police are Muslims, so, you know, who knows? Maybe they're going to do it on their off-duty, right, and get paid by CARE. CARE's probably going to come in. Actually, they moved the White House to 666 Pennsylvania Avenue. That's great.
Oh, my goodness.
That's great. I love that. Yeah, I think it's been there for just over 4 years, right?
Yeah.
They had that moving company come in and move it there. Wow, that's good. I like that. Holy crololies. There's just no way they could have that many people marching for that long time anyways. they'd have to do the – well, wait a minute. They can't march for that long. Think about the five times a day. They're going to block streets and put their butts in the air in the middle of the streets? I don't think so. I mean, look at what Glenn Beck did back in 2008. When was that? The first one that he had there in D.C.? Holy cololies. There was a gazillion people there. I can't even count the zeros on a gazillion. But they had a gazillion people there, and it was clean. And we didn't march up and down the streets, but, wow, I just, you know, the police that they're going to have for protection. 9/11
exactly.
is a sacred date to the United States. It occurred because of, what was it, nine Islamic radical Muslims taking down three aircraft, airliners, Twin Towers, Pentagon. How dare them do it on a sacred date that took the lives of so many? That
exactly. And I noticed on one little thing that he wrote on his page was that he was responding to someone who had responded to him on the page. This is the MD guy, Alam. And he says, oh, no, it's, we're just, you know, we're mourning the victims. We lost people, too. You know, Muslims were killed on that day too. And, you know, we lost people, too, and that's what we're doing it for. But if you notice on their statement, on their official statement, they don't say we are marching on 9/11 to mourn the victims, you know, the Muslims that were killed, too. No, they're demanding their civil rights.
I'm being corrected. Sorry. It was 19, not 9. That's right, 19. Well, I forgot to take my shoes off. I'm telling you, I got to get some sleep. Who said it in there? I think it was Kat that said it's their plan is disruption, and I think it's intimidation as well. The plan is to have. I don't care if they lost. We lost Muslims. Yeah, we lost peaceful Muslims. There are peaceful Muslims. I'm not here to hate Muslims. I'm here to hate the Sharia compliant Islamic that is demanding that I change my ways, demanding that I follow them, demanding my freedoms from me. That's what I'm standing against. So, yeah, there were Muslims, and there are some Muslims that do not practice Sharia. I put myself on the fence on who's the bad guy and who's the good guy, because it's just so hard to tell. But here's the thing. 9/11 is an American tragedy, and they want to come in and do a million Muslim march on a day that's going to...
It's a slap in the face.
It's intimidation, and it's disruption of city because of everything they would have to do to allow that. But what would be really funny is if they only got 15 people and they had it all over the media that it fizzled, that nobody came. What's the saying? Who held the party and nobody came or something, you know? I think, quite frankly, they've tried to do this. If you go out and Google it, you'll see they tried to do it for the last two, maybe 3 years. I've seen where they've threatened, but where I'm concerned, and I think this little boy toy, whatever he is, idiot that's trying to plan it, I think he's getting involved with the Nation of Islam. That's where it could get really dangerous. So let's see. He doesn't get CARE involved. They won't play nice. So he still looks for his buddies to show up, and he wants as many that can get there as possible. Where's he go next? Starts going to the bad guys, the Nation of Islam. They'd be willing to show up in a heartbeat, and I've seen some pretty scary stories that say that they're planning some great and wonderful stuff for us as well. So Nation of Islam gets involved, and that's where it could get very, very, very dangerous. So I don't know. I don't know where this could go. I don't know where it will go. I don't know if that – maybe that's our kickoff. Maybe that's the kickoff to the dangerous times that we've been all waiting for it to happen. I don't know. But I think there was even something I saw that said Obama and Louis Farrakhan, 2006. Maybe some of you have seen that too. 2004 maybe. Somewhere in there, 3 or 4. Actually participated, and it's kind of hidden in some of the storylines and probably blocked for the most part, but I was trying to find and do some verification, but I ran out of time, that he actually linked up with Louis Farrakhan in terms of some of his marches that he's done. And the 'cause I think Farrakhan did have something back about, maybe it was the late 90s, early 2000. He had something. Do you remember anything about that, Lucha? I vaguely remember it. I'll have to do some research on it. But they, pretty sure Louis Farrakhan had something going on, too, back years ago. So that part worries me a bit in terms of what they'll do and where they'll have it. And I just wonder, don't they have to get permits? Don't they have to get all kinds of police allowance, some kind of okay, some kind of traffic patterns adjusted, things like that? So how do you apply for something like that and get the okay?
Well, I guess you just go to the city and get the permits, you know. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people to let you know what you need to apply for and stuff, and maybe Tom going and maybe doing a whole counter demonstration wouldn't be the thing. Maybe the thing would be to join, you know. I mean, if Tom's going to be his honored guest, then there's just so many opportunities there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I do want to tell you about a victory from Pamela Geller, because the it's a free speech victory. Chicago Transit caves, and My Jihad ads will run. And so, because they were accepting the My Jihad ads from the CARE guys, but not from Pamela Geller. So David Yerel Shami, of course, from the American Freedom Law Center, you know, they did the lawsuit, you know, they went through the whole thing. And the Chicago Transit Authority has agreed to display plain-spoken anti-jihad ads on city buses following a lawsuit by the American Freedom Law Center. City officials initially rejected the American Freedom Defense Initiative's anti-jihad ads. Now, that's Pamela Geller's organization, AFDI, American Freedom Defense Initiative, even after the city accepted bus ads that touted a sanitized portrayal of jihad as exercise and education rather than warfare. So here you got Chicago Transit accepting the portrayal of jihad as exercise and education, but then they didn't let Pamela Geller's ads run about the other side of jihad. Okay, so the center's anti-jihad ads are, quote, morally reprehensible. Well, here's the letter. Here's the letter from the Chicago Transit Authority. Her name is Karen Siemitz, to David Yerel Shami of the American Freedom Law Center. And she's the general counsel of the law department. And she says, "Dear Mr. Yerel Shami, in our view, the newest bus ads AFDI submitted to Chicago Transit Authority are morally reprehensible, advocating racism, hatred, and intolerance of cultural diversity. The city of Chicago was built upon and depends upon that very diversity. Nevertheless, the CTA is also aware that AFDI filed lawsuits against the transit agencies in New York and Washington when they refused or delayed acceptance of similar ads, and that AFDI prevailed under the First Amendment of the United States Constitution." Woohoo! Consequently, The Chicago Transit Authority will accept the 5 proposed ads submitted by AFDI with the changes previously agreed upon, including the removal of the myjihad.us domain name. As indicated in your email dated January 28th, please have your client prepare the new artwork and forward it to Titan. As with all other advertisers, AFDI will be required to sign an agreement that it will pay the Chicago Transit Authority's costs of defense and indemnify CTA for any copyright trademark claim. Okay, so basically, this lady is saying that that Pamela Geller's ads, that are saying jihad for what it is, those ads are morally reprehensible, advocating racism, hatred, and tolerance of cultural intolerance of cultural diversity. Excuse me, you are an attorney in Chicago. Your name is Karen Siemens, and you are saying that portraying jihad as it really is morally reprehensible. Is the ad telling the truth about jihad morally reprehensible to you, or is jihad morally reprehensible to you? Racism, I don't think so. Pamela Geller's, Islam isn't even a race. Pamela Geller's ads had nothing of that in it. And intolerance, this is what I thought was it, intolerance of cultural diversity. Excuse me, when should we let jihad, when should we let what happened on 9/11/2001 be cultural diversity? I don't think so. So, David Yerushalmi, he responded back to Ms. Siemens, and he says, "Dear Ms. Siemens, excuse me, thank you for your letter of today's date. To the extent that the indemnity you will ask my client to sign is commercially and legally reasonable and indeed an agreement required of all advertisers, I don't imagine that will be an issue. As to your prefatory comment about my client's ad being morally reprehensible, I must note that you provide no basis for your professed moral outrage other than conclusory language about advocating racism, hatred, and the like. For a lawyer employed by a state entity, your comments are both inappropriate and logically inept. My client's ad advocates no such thing. That suggests, of course, that your comment is a political cover for the Chicago Transit Authority, which in turn speaks to the lack of intellectual integrity and moral rectitude of both the CTA and its spokesperson. Be that as it may, the CTA has capitulated grudgingly, apparently, to the First Amendment of the Constitution. And apparently, we have my clients to thank for that." Woo-hoo!
All right.
Now, I mean, one of Pamela Geller's ads are, it's got a picture of Erdogan from Turkey, the president or whatever they call him in Turkey.
Yep.
And he says, that these are his words, "The mosques are barracks, the domes are helmets, the minarets are bayonets, and the faithful are soldiers." He's the prime minister of Turkey. That's his jihad. What's yours? Okay, now, I don't see anything reprehensible about Pamela Geller posting that ad showing the truth of what is being said. What I see morally reprehensible is talking about what he said. Minarets are their bayonets and mosques are our barracks. That's telling us that you view your mosques as a place in which to wage war. And that's morally reprehensible to me.
Yes, absolutely. They just
I think their hypocrisy is amazing. You know, I think they're ignorant, and their ignorance is going to kill us. They're maybe whether they're willfully ignorant or just blindly ignorant, that ignorance is going to kill us. They need to do some real studying on what Islam is and be willing to stand up to it. Because I'll tell you what, I imagine future scenarios. And in the future, if some Muslim wants to behead me for not accepting Islam, fine, behead me. I would rather die in liberty than live in terror. I would rather die saying the name of my Lord Jesus Christ than live under the conditions under which you want me to live. I will not submit.
Neither will I. I stand with you, absolutely. And, I keep reminding myself, and this is not a positive thing to remind myself of, but I remind myself often of Daniel Pearl being asked to submit, and he refused, and they slit his throat, and I hope I am always as strong as that. So I will leave that one alone. I believe he is in heaven with his maker. Let me go on a little bit about this. Did you see about Ahmadinejad, whatever his name is there? He's visiting Egypt, and he's telling reporters while in Egypt that he wanted to pray in Jerusalem after the liberation. He also said he wants to visit the Gaza Strip. It was his first trip to Egypt since the Arab Spring Revolution. He wants to go to Gaza, pray in Jerusalem after liberation. Due to visit Egypt, this week, Iran's president expressed interest in visiting. Oh, okay, whatever. Quit repeating it. So anyways, he's in Egypt working with Morsi. James Clapper's is Muslim Brotherhood and Morsi, they're just, you know, a secular organization. Ahmadinejad is, and then they show him weeping at a mausoleum of Muslim saint. Now, this is, where did this article, this came from the Gateway Pundit. Hang on, Lucha. Ahmadinejad weeps at mausoleum of Muslim saint in Cairo. Number one, I've never heard of any Muslim saint. So the media once again twists things. Even the Gateway Pundit, I'm kind of surprised at them. They're usually not as, they lean a little bit more right in telling the truth and what's going on here. But Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad prayed and wept beside the tomb of whatever, Sayyid Ziyab, daughter of, excuse me, now she's got me going. Shia Islam's central figure. He's standing at a wired gate with his hand over his face. What a bunch of crap. On a historic visit to Egypt on Tuesday. Apparently this quote-unquote saint was the daughter of Al-Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib. They have a simple name. Gertrude Gunther Tabitha Anglia Toenail Mohammed, whatever. Anyways, central figure of Shia Islam and the cousin of Islam's prophet Muhammad. Wow. And
interesting.
She's a saint because she was the cousin of the Islam prophet Muhammad. I'm sorry, but there are no saints in Islam. So, he just makes
me
tear up
all over
the place. Not yet. No, I haven't seen any callers so far. Nobody wants to talk to us. Oh, sorry. Yeah,
okay, well, I just wondered. I sent him a message to with the show link, so I was wondering if he had called in. Okay.
Yeah, nope. Have not seen him. I've been watching for him. I've got his name and number down. So,
okey-dokey.
Anyways, between that and the Boy Scouts of America trying to open up the Boy Scouts to gays.
Well, they have backtracked on that, Eliza, and I'm just reading it. They America stood tall, and there was a half-page ad placed in USA Today, and the Boy Scouts of America is putting their decision to allow gays in the Boy Scouts. They're putting it on hold until May because they have had a lot of feedback from great Americans like you and me and everybody else who wrote, who called, who did whatever. At Boy Scouts, your voice was heard. America's voice was heard. And there were a lot of Boy Scout leaders. I had read an article. I don't have it in front of me. But one of the main Boy Scout leaders, he was on the phone with a lot of Boy Scout leaders nationwide who were simply going to pull out. They were going to pull out. And there's like 2-point-something million Boy Scouts, and there's 1 million volunteers or something. And it was said that maybe some leaders were going to stay in because, the deal was that they could pick their own units, you know, that if certain Boy Scout troops wanted to let homosexuals in, they could, and then others were not, and then that was supposed to be okay. But then what happens when they all go camping for the year, you know?
Exactly.
And also what was brought up was that the Boy Scout policy, if it's a husband and a wife scouting team, they let the husband and the wife sleep together in the tent. Well, were they supposed to let homosexuals sleep in the tent together? So America's voice was heard, and they are putting off the decision until May. And I hope between now and then that the Boy Scouts is going to learn a big lesson. You know, the article basically said that they would have ended up with a lot of money maybe, but no organization because so many Boy Scout leaders were going to pull out and so many families were going to pull their children out. And I say amen to that.
I do as well. I just am concerned that they're just going to put the decision off till May and slide it under the radar, and nobody will even know it, and it'll become their law of the land, so to speak. And at that point, that's the part why can't they make a decision right now? Why wait till May? I mean, it seems like a no-brainer to me. If they're going to lose funds, they're going to lose people, they're going to lose the prestige of it all, they're going to have to worry about pedophilia, they're going to have to worry about who's doing what in the tents, they're going to have to worry about all that. Why would they put themselves in that position? It just does, it boggles my mind.
Money.
That decisions can't be made. Money, exactly. So at the
money
end of the
day. Because these gay activists, they contacted a lot of the donors, a lot of the people that donated to the Boy Scouts, and they said that the Boy Scouts were being homophobic and this and that. So these gay activists put pressure on a lot of donors, and the donors pulled their money out of the Boy Scouts. So the Boy Scouts thought, well, maybe we better, do something about this and let gays in. But now a new message is being told to the Boy Scouts that, wait a minute. You may get all this money back from these donors, but you're not going to have us. And my question, Eliza, is, what is the name of this organ? I think it's Scouts for Equality or something like that. I don't know if that's the name of it because I don't have the thing in front of me. But I guess this place, Scouts for Equality or something like that, is making a lot of noise. Well, why don't they start their own Boy Scouting club? I mean, the Boy Scouts had to start somewhere, correct? So if they want to have a gay scout club, let them start a gay scout club. They don't even have to call it Gay Scouts of America. They can call it Scouts for Equality. Let them form their own organization and leave the Boy Scouts the heck alone.
Yeah, I agree. If nothing else, or they open it up to gays and then the conservative ones move on and start their own as well. I think it just has to be. I'm so tired of the social experiment and what they're trying to do to us in terms of turning us completely around. The whole Cass Sunstein bottom-up, top-down, and inside-out, they're doing it. It's pretty much done. And I'm tired of the turmoil that they constantly give us and feed us. It's a constant battle to have any values, and the only people that are getting attacked are the people with values. Anybody who has any moral fiber or any Christian values, they're the ones that are getting attacked. Anybody who from the standpoint of even the gun owners, the ones that are doing it legally are the ones that are under the gun, for lack of better words, and under the attack. Because from the standpoint of just looking at it from the gun owners, I'm a legal gun owner. I've followed the rules. I've filed for my permit. I take the training. But I'm the one that's going to have to – they're going to knock on my door because they know I've got it. They're going – either that or this whole new crap they're trying to do now with the gun owner's insurance that – what is it, California, I think, is trying to put in place. If I own a gun, then it – somebody put it on the talk show I was listening to on the way home that said, okay, let's see. I'm in California. I own a gun, so I've got to get liability insurance. So let's see. Somebody breaks in my door. I shoot them. Maybe I kill them. Maybe I don't kill them. So now they're, they or their family is going to sue me, and so my insurance now is going to have to cover the shooting because they broke in my house. What?
Exactly. Yes.
It's insane.
There are a lot of people moving out of California, and I'm here, and I'm here, and I don't blame them. I want to move to Texas so bad. It's become. When Phil Mickelson only gets to keep 37 cents out of every dollar he makes, there is something incredibly wrong.
Yes. When you've got the stars that way. It's almost like Sarkozy moving out of France. It's like, what? None of it makes any sense. The world is upside down right now, and all I can do is barely go to sleep, barely get up in the morning, barely get, myself moving throughout the day. I'm exhausted trying to keep up, and I've got people coming at me, did you hear about this? Did you hear about that? It's like, okay. But let's go back and welcome people from the chat room. You guys have been fantastic tonight. Iggy Mom, Kath Fern, Green Dog, I guess that's a.k.a. Vorp. I'm not sure. Would we going in disguise under the radar? Okay, whatever, Vorp. Glad to have you here. Guest 4497, whomever that person is in disguise, Holger. Always glad to have you. Kel, a.k.a. Red Fox. Smokey in Texas, Will Scott, you guys are fantastic. We're starting to wind down the show, and I probably need to go get myself a glass of wine there, Lucha. Winding down. This thing has gotten me ramped up. I wasn't sure I was going to have the energy to continue on. But let me read you a couple things that I got in emails. I got to just kind of close out the night, if you don't mind, unless you've got something pressing you want to throw out there, Lucha.
No, go ahead.
Somebody sent me this thing. It's pretty long, so I'll only read parts of it, but it's there are two parts to it, and it tells me I need to read the second part, but it's from Thomas Jefferson. It's a lot of things that he did throughout his life. He was a remarkable man who started learning very early in life and never stopped. At age 5, he began studying under his cousin's tutor. At 9, he studied Latin, Greek, and French. At 14, studied classical literature and additional languages. 16, entered the College of William and Mary. 19, studied law for 5 years, starting under George Wythe, W-Y-T-H-E. At 23, started his own law practice. 25, was elected to the Virginia House of Burgesses. 31, wrote the widely circulated Summary View of the Rights of British America and retired from his law practice. At 31, wow. 32, was a delegate to the Second Continental Congress. 33, wrote the Declaration of Independence. Wow. How could any, you know, could I can't even imagine 33 writing something of that magnitude. 33, he also took 3 years to revise the Virginia's legal code and wrote a public education bill and a statute for religious freedom. 36, was elected to the second governor of Virginia, succeeded Patrick Henry. 40, served in Congress for 2 years. 41, was the American minister to France and negotiated commercial treaties with European nations, along with Ben Franklin and John Adams. 46, served as the first Secretary of State under George Washington. 53, served as Vice President and was elected President of the American Philosophical Society. 55, drafted the Kentucky Resolutions and became the active head of the Republican Party. 57, elected to the third President of the United States. At 57, 60, obtained the Louisiana Purchase, doubling the nation's size. 61, elected to a second term as president. 65, retired to Monticello. At 80, helped President Monroe shape the Monroe Doctrine. 81, almost single-handedly created the University of Virginia and served as its first president. 83, died on the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, along with John Adams. Wow, what a life. John F. Kennedy apparently held a dinner in the White House for a group of the brightest minds in the nation at that time. He made this statement, quote, "This is perhaps the assembly of the most intelligence ever to gather at one time in the White House, with the exception of when Thomas Jefferson dined alone," unquote. That's a pretty nifty tribute, isn't it?
Wow.
What a man at 81. I hope I've got the energy to continue on at 81. Now,
oh,
my last one.
I don't want to be alive when I'm 81. I hope I go sooner than that.
I do. Oh, come on. You're going to be dancing in the streets amongst all the Islamists. Come on. Oh, now, this one's going to make your head explode. This is the one
boy.
In Michigan. Okay, everybody sitting down? Everybody grab a chair. This is going to be your lesson on how to scam the system.
Oh, boy.
Okay, this is a realtor. He's been a realtor for the past 28 years, and he thought he'd seen everything. Until now, he was showing homes in Pontiac, Michigan, one afternoon recently and showed up at a home at the 4 p.m. time the appointment was scheduled for. Excuse me. After I woke up the homeowner at 4 p.m., she let us in and then proceeded to tell my buyers that I had that she has already entered into a contract to sell the home on a short sale. Well, we all know what a short sale is, where the banks accept less money than is owed on the home, right? So, after some chit-chat, she proceeded to tell us that she and her sister, who also lived in the area, were buying each other's homes via the short sale process. I mentioned to her that I thought relatives could not be involved in those transactions. She smiled and said, quote, "We have two different last names, so no one knows the difference," unquote. She went on to tell us that each of them owed over $100,000 in their homes and were in the process of buying each other's homes for about $10,000 to $15,000 cash. To top it off, they were each receiving $3,000 in government-provided relocation assistance at closing. It gets even better. My buyers and I were amazed that she was outright admitting to fraud, and yet she continued. She began to tell us that the best part of her scheme was that because they currently were not working, that they both are now receiving Section 8 vouchers. I said, "I thought that was for renters," and she said, "That's the best part. Me and my sister are going to be renting each other's homes so we don't even have to move. And Obama is going to give us each $800 a month to pay the rent." Okay, I was adding a little license there. Anyways, she then picked up a picture she had framed of Obama and did a little happy dance. Wow, screaming and singing. "Thank you, Obama. Thank you, Obama." Here's the bottom line. Both of these scammers got at least $80,000 in debt forgiven.
Oh.
$3,000 in cash for relocation, when in fact they didn't relocate. And on top of it all, you and I are now paying, through our taxes, $1,600 in rent for each of them every single month. Wow. Is it any wonder why so many people have decided that all they have to do is vote for the Democrats and they will be taken care of for life at the expense of taxpayers?
And that's what's going on.
These women went from working and paying about $900 a month each in mortgage payments to staying home and getting paid $800 a month each to live in the same home they had been living in, and all they had to do was lie on a few papers.
And that's what happens. People do that. Real quick, because I know we're almost out of time. Since our friend didn't come in, I'm just going to plug his thing real quick. Well, it's actually from the Oath Keepers. It is a peaceful demonstration in every state capital for our Second Amendment rights. So if you guys are near your state capitals, it's on February 8th, and it'll be at 10 a.m. So there's going to be just a peaceful demonstration at every state capitol for Second Amendment rights. And it was started by the Oath Keepers. So if you guys can make it to your capitals.
Oh, it did? I didn't know that. Yep.
Yeah. If you guys can make it to your capitals on February 8th, there's, I'm sure you can find it on the Oath Keepers website.
Yep. And I want to say thank you to everybody. We appreciate you being here. We've just got a few seconds left. You guys all have a great week. We will be back with a lot more fun-filled stuff on Radio Jihad Network. I put a couple of links in there for you to check out. I wanted to all keep up with the American Laws for American Courts that we need to get moving in many, many states, as well as Tom Trento's. And please go out and friend Radio Jihad Network on Facebook and get on with the teapartycommunity.com. Excellent, excellent website. So much better than Facebook. So, you guys, God bless you all. Have a great week. Thanks for coming. Lucha, it's all yours.
As I cough. Thank you, guys. We love you guys. I know. We We love you guys. Iggy Mom, Kath, Eric from Iowa, Vorp, a guest, Hold Your Awakens, Kel, Loki joined us, and so Smokey in Texas, and Will Scott. Thank you guys for joining us. We appreciate you being here. We love you guys, and God bless you.
Amen. And this is going to be a great week. We're all going to follow through and just make them all understand this is our land, our America. Night, all.
Amen. We won't back down.
Absolutely.